Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman. Strange.
Welcome back to the BBC World Service. I'm James Fletcher. When I was a kid growing up in Australia, I used to watch reruns of the 1950s Superman TV show. And there was one line that I still remember.
Fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
Truth, justice, and the American way. From Superman to contemporary courtroom dramas, American popular culture often portrays the US as the home of the highest legal principles, where people are innocent until proven guilty, and where the right to a fair trial means justice ultimately is the American way. So I was surprised to learn recently that on any given day in America, nearly 500,000 people are in jail without being convicted of a crime. That's more than the total prison population of any other country in the world, except China, Brazil, and Russia. Most of those people will never face trial. For assignment this week, I've come to New York City to find out why.
AR1 is back in session. Come to order.
Step out. This is Kings County Criminal Court in Brooklyn. If you're arrested and charged in Brooklyn, you'll be brought here within around 24 hours to face a judge for the first time. It's known as arraignment.
Step out. The defendant is charged with Penal Law 155.30 and various other charges.
The defendants are mostly people of colour, African-American and Hispanic, and they're mostly poor, which means they're represented by public defenders.
The allegation that my client hit the complaining witness in the head with a hammer, given the injuries that the people just cited, it makes no sense.
The most important decision the judge has to make in arraignments is about whether to set bail. The judge in court today is the supervising judge of this courthouse, Michael Yavinsky.
Bail is supposed to be set only in an amount necessary to return a defendant to court. If we think that somebody is no risk to fail to appear, we should be releasing that person, and that's pretty clear in the law.
My client is not a flight risk at all, and in light of all of the facts and circumstances in this case, Judge, I am asking that you release him on his own recognizance. He will absolutely return to court.
Released on their own recognizance, or ROR, means the defendant can walk out of the courtroom with no conditions, except that they return for any future court dates.
POP is issued, ROR, she has a copy. You have your copy, you're free to go.
It's the most common outcome of arraignments in New York, particularly for those accused of less serious crimes known as misdemeanors. But in a number of cases, particularly for those accused of more serious crimes known as felonies, bail is set.
Bail set amount of $5,000, insurance company bond, $5,000 cash. Temporary protection is issued.
If the defendants can pay or find someone to pay for them, they'll be released. If they turn up for all their court dates, they get the money back, even if they're found guilty. But if the defendant can't pay the bail, they'll be sent to jail to await their time in court.
There are some people who the only way to get them come back to court is the Department of Corrections bringing them back and forth to court. All we are looking for and all we're permitted to look for is to get the defendant to return to court.
At this time, folks, Part AO1 is going to take its scheduled lunch recess. Court will reconvene at 2:15. Please rise and exit the courtroom.
The purpose of bail in New York is to ensure someone's return to court. It's supposed to be an incentive, not a punishment.
How does it work in practice?
In practice, it serves as a punishment.
Scott Heckinger is a senior lawyer with Brooklyn Defender Services, public defenders who represent around half of the people arrested in Brooklyn. He's often representing people in the arraignment court.
The vast majority of my clients can't afford $10, $50, $500. $500 for my clients might as well be a million, might as well be 5 million. And so what it winds up doing is imprisoning the poor and largely the people of color. So I'm looking at the file for my client. It looks like a lot of rap sheets that I see. 36 arrests, 31 convictions, a lot of felonies early on in his life, and just a host of crimes of poverty thereafter.
Yeah, I was a troubled child. I didn't do anything specific. I never killed nobody. I never really stole from anybody. I had a little couple of things which I did just, you know, because I had a drug problem. During the years, you grow out of this stuff. You just don't want to fight anymore.
In a Dunkin' Donuts cafe out in the borough of Queens, I meet Scott's client, who I'll call Juan. He's lean and wiry, dressed in jeans and work boots, and he says that by early last year, he was working hard to turn his life around.
You know, I was homeless. I struggled every day. I almost didn't have anything to eat, but I was grateful for the job that I had, that, you know, I was able to save a little bit of money.
He was working two jobs and was at the front of the queue for housing.
I had counselors that were actually putting me on the van on days off and going to see an apartment.
And he was enrolled in a methadone program to kick his habit. In January last year, he was leaving the clinic after a daytime New Year's celebration and heading to work. A police van pulled up, and Juan was asked for ID and eventually searched.
That's when he pulled out a plastic bag out of my pocket and said, oh, I thought you didn't have anything on you and stuff. And I told him, listen, you know, I use, you know, it's my personal use.
The bag contained 21 small doses of heroin. Juan was arrested and charged with possession with intent to sell, which is a serious felony. He met Scott, his assigned lawyer, in a holding cell behind the arraignment courtroom in Brooklyn.
He showed me his arms that were covered with tread marks, so places where he actually would inject himself with heroin. And he said, look, I'm not a drug seller. I was doing this solely for personal use, and I was stopped and frisked unconstitutionally. He was really, really scared.
Juan felt the police had no justification for stopping and searching him, as they're required to by the U.S. Constitution. He wanted to fight the charges, so Scott asked for him to be released.
I looked at the judge, and I told his story. I told the story about a guy who, yes, had a terrible past, but has been trying to do everything in the present to get back on the right track. And I told the judge explicitly that you could set $15 and he wouldn't be able to make the bail. Any amount of bail would be preventative detention. Please, take a chance on my client and let him come back to court on his own. He has before and he will again. She set bail in the amount of $5,000.
I was extremely overwhelmed. How am I going to be able to post a $5,000 bail? It's like ridiculous, you know?
So Juan was put on a bus to a notorious jail called Rikers Island. We'll hear more about it in a few minutes.
It was a huge nightmare for me. I really felt hopeless. It was like being put in a cave with no type of resources whatsoever. I was totally lost, so it was devastating.
Eventually, Scott managed to work out a deal where Juan could plead guilty to a lesser crime and enroll in a drug treatment program. Faced with the prospect of spending months or even years in Rikers to fight his case, Juan says he felt forced to take the plea. But during the time he'd already spent in jail, Juan lost one of his jobs and his place in the queue for housing.
If it wasn't for the nature of this arrest, I would have had my apartment already. I think I would have been financially stabled. I probably would have been, like, detoxed already. And basically, I think I would have been a lot easier for me. So, yeah, that's the big impact.
And that impact isn't because he was guilty or innocent, but because he couldn't afford $5,000 bail.
Bail didn't need to happen in this case. This is someone who would have come back to court on his own. I know this because over the last year and a half, while he's been doing drug treatment, he's come back to court over 20 different times on his own to show updates from his drug treatment.
Juan is not alone in pleading guilty. In 2015, more than 300,000 cases came through New York's criminal courts. Almost half were resolved by guilty plea. Only 243 cases resulted in conviction after a trial.
The truth is that there's far too many cases and far too many arrests and far too few defenders, prosecutors, and judges to handle that volume. And so bail really serves as the grease to keep the wheels of the criminal justice system churning. Cases are resolved far before trial, largely by means of guilty pleas and plea bargaining.
And where does it leave that core idea of innocent until proven guilty?
Bail leaves the concept of innocent until proven guilty in the dust. It makes it disappear. Bail creates two systems of justice, one for those who can afford and one for those who can't.
In 2016, 35,000 people were held in New York's jails because they couldn't afford to pay bail at a cost of $116 million. And the majority of them were held at the same jail that Juan was sent to, Rikers Island.
That was my high school prom right there.
Oh, come and show me this, just up on the wall here. It's like
top of the television. There's lots of photos.
This is me. I don't even remember the girl's name, really.
Come on.
I really don't, but...
You're looking very slick, very dapper. You've got a black suit on.
Yep, matching tie. My name is Joel Cruz. I'm 25 years old from Manhattan.
And how long ago was that?
This was, 2010, 7 years ago now.
And how do you feel looking back on that guy standing in that photo?
No, I'm not that guy no more. You know, that kid right there, he was nice, you know, very innocent, very naive.
Joel tells me he had a good job for several years after school, but then a breakup with a girlfriend led to a downward spiral. Drugs, homelessness, and convictions and incarceration for low-level theft. In May this year, he pled guilty to petty theft and was referred to a rehabilitation program. The next day, he was arrested again for allegedly stealing headphones worth $78 from an electronics store. He wanted to fight this charge, and a government agency assessed him as suitable for release. But a judge set bail at $1,000.
Nah, I felt like it was high as hell. So I just felt like it was just unfair.
Do you have $1,000? Can you pay that?
No, absolutely not. And, you know, once they set bail and they set a court date, I knew I was going to Rikers.
Were you worried about going there?
Yeah, I was. I mean, you know, because, you know, Rikers is like a whole different animal.
Rikers Island is the main jail complex in New York City, a collection of 10 different jails, holding around 10,000 inmates in total. It sits on an island in the river east of Manhattan, an island partly made out of landfill and garbage, accessible only by a long bridge from the mainland.
Man, it's gritty, man. It's dirty. It's almost like a dungeon kind of feel to it. It smells like very humid and damp and stuff. It's almost like you're underground. It's very, very old school, you know. It's not like something modern or nothing like that. It has like an eerie feel to it, you know, makes your skin crawl a little bit.
Joel was taken to a holding cell with other inmates, but says he was concerned about his safety because of rumors that some of his family had ties to gangs. He asked to be transferred to protective custody, but nothing was done. After he'd been there for around 8 hours...
Basically, this one guy that was in the cell with me, he woke up, he was sleeping the whole time I was there, he asked me if I bang. You know, if I was in a gang, basically. And I said no. And then, you know, the guy waited like 10 minutes. I put my, you know, I was closing my eyes, and all of a sudden, you know, he attacked me. Basically, he sucker punched me. I fell on the floor. He removed a knife from his anus area, and then he just stabbed me one time in the back of the neck and then just kind of drags down.
Oh, so you've just turned around and shown me, and there's a huge... scar, still quite raw. It's still got stitches in it, I think. Yep. Yeah. Just running down from, you've got short hair, and just the back of where your hairline is there, it probably runs a good 10, 15 centimeters right down the back of your neck. That is a big wound.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that, you know, is going to stay with me forever.
And then the one on the side?
What's the second one? This one was right here on top of the vein. If you would have just went a little deeper, you know, it would have been over, you know what I mean? Like, if I would have died right there, you know, that would have been messed up.
Guards eventually responded, and Joel was taken to intensive care.
80 stitches in the back, some stitches right here in my face, and then the rest of the lacerations in my neck has all been, you know, glued together.
Joel's lawyer, Lauren Gottesman, was unaware what had happened until his next court date several days later.
And he walks in with this bloodied bandage from one ear all the way down to the back of his neck. I was just in total shock. I had no idea. I was genuinely fearful for what would happen to Joel if he went back.
Joel was desperate not to go back to Rikers, so Lauren tried to get the judge to agree to reconsider his bail or sentence him to the time he'd already served if he pled guilty.
I was pleading with the judge, you know, just on the one hand here we have a human life that is in grave danger, and on the other hand we have $78 worth of headphones.
The judge refused, so Lauren had to go to a bail review hearing in front of a New York Supreme Court judge. Ultimately, she was successful, and Joel was released.
Like around 1 o'clock in the morning, sergeant comes and says, hey, you're being civilly discharged.
What happened to Joel is not uncommon. Rikers has been widely condemned as a place where violence, sexual assault and corruption are endemic. Earlier this year, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio committed to closing Rikers within 10 years, but there's no plan yet for how to make that happen. So, for the foreseeable future, other New Yorkers, often on minor charges like Joelle, will suffer similar experiences because they can't afford to post bail.
I can't really move my neck a lot. It's affected my mental, it's affected my sleep. You know, I have a lot of dreams about what happened and stuff like that, so it's a lot of PTSD, underlying PTSD stuff going on.
Let's go back to the arraignment court in Brooklyn.
I think that the good people at supervised release will keep him on a short leash. I think there's plenty of reason for the court to release him.
There are signs here of reforms designed to reduce the numbers of people on bail. Judges can now use supervised release, a new program funded by the city, which provides an alternative to bail for around 3,000 people each year.
It's stated that there's the glass pipe on the stairs, allegedly under her leg, but not in her possession. This is something that is likely going to end with a violation with no jail time, so we would ask that you would ROR or supervised release.
A young woman appears before Judge Yavinsky, charged with drug possession, and has missed a recent court date.
I am setting bail in the amount of $1,000, insurance company bond of $1,000 cash on each.
Judge Yavinsky sets bail, so it looks like the young woman will be off to Rikers. But then the defence lawyer comes over to talk to a young man sitting next to me in the courtroom, Terence Bogans. He works for the Brooklyn Community Bail Fund, a non-profit organisation who pay bail for people too poor to pay for themselves.
Her case has been adjourned for tomorrow. I'll probably run back and speak to her and see if we could pay her bail again, if we can get confident that she'll return to court.
The public defender came over and sort of said, do you think you can have a look at this? And then she said, should I go and tell them? I mean, is there now a bit of a race against time in terms of even if you are willing to pay the bail, she could just be put on a bus to Rikers anyway?
Absolutely. So we have to try to pay the bail basically before the bus shows up. It's always sort of a rush.
Terence decides they will pay this bail, so the race is on. He has an envelope full of cashier's checks, so the money's not a problem. But getting all the paperwork done and in the right place at the right time is quite a challenge. Right, we just reached the fifth floor.
So this is the cashier's office for the courthouse, so anyone paying bail, but also folks paying fines.
What's really striking about this process is that every part of it is done on paper. This is not a computerized system. There's a guy behind the wire mesh here isn't entering this all into a computer. He's handwriting it onto a form which is in a thick invoice book where there's carbon paper between the pages to make multiple copies.
New York is planning to introduce online bail payment, but for now it's an antiquated, confusing and slow system. As several people told me, with bail, the process is the punishment. But this time it's successful.
Okay, so when do you come back for these two cases?
Tomorrow
9:30. All right, so we'll see you in the morning, okay?
Excuse me. Can I just ask you very quickly, what does it mean to you to... They bailed you out, so...
It means a lot, like... Because I don't have the money to bail myself out, so... It's a one in a million, man. You know, to have people even take a chance on you. Sleeping in my bed tonight. Yeah, they're great.
All right, thank you. We'll see you tomorrow, okay?
Be there.
All right.
I leave the courthouse and head around the corner to meet Terence's boss at the bail fund, Peter Goldberg. The fund's been running for 2 years and will pay bail for an estimated 1,400 people this year, people who judges have decided are unlikely to return to court on their own.
95% of our clients have made all the required court dates. They have no skin in the game. There's no financial incentive. We've shown and continue to show that people will come back to court, often on their own, and sometimes just with a little support from us.
Research elsewhere supports this idea that cash bail makes little difference to whether people return to court or not. Peter Goldberg says the cash bail system is broken.
One way to fix that is to have charitable bail funds running around court and paying for people. Another way to fix that is not set bail on folks and not condition their freedom, their liberty, on the size of money in their wallet.
The idea is that in all but a very small number of cases, defendants would be released on their own recognizance. This campaign to end cash bail is gaining support across the United States. A combination of legal battles and legislative reform are pushing back cash bail in places as diverse as Connecticut and Texas. And it's not just Democrats and progressives who support it. In neighbouring New Jersey, a Republican governor recently signed into law reforms that mostly eliminated cash bail. But in New York and around the country, there is strong opposition to reform from another part of the bail world.
Jojo?
Okay, well, right now we're in the waiting room of Empire Bail Bonds Nassau County location.
And so when somebody needs a bail bond, they come in here, they come up to this window here. It's kind of got the thick glass, like a cashier's window. And so what happens?
So one of the first things that we want to do usually with the moms and the aunts and things like that is we want to allay their fears. I always tell my staff, make sure you bring them like you're bringing them to your kitchen.
This is Michelle Eskenazi, the self-styled bail bond queen of New York and owner of Empire Bail Bonds. Only America and the Philippines have for-profit bail bond industries, where commercial operators post bail for people who can't afford it. In return, they charge a non-refundable fee, generally around 10% of the total bond. As it's their money on the line, the bondsmen have a range of ways of making sure defendants show up in courts, ranging from regular check-ins to hiring bounty hunters to recapture defendants if they flee.
I come from a Cuban immigrant family. We were taught that there was consequence to everything. Crime was never on the menu.
We've talked about the powerful American narratives around justice. Michelle Eskenazi and the bail bond industry call on other powerful and recognizable American stories too. Responsibility and self-reliance, and also the sense that private industry can do anything government can, and better.
My feeling about the bail system is it's not broken. So why are we seeking to fix it? The government cannot handle what we do as private industry. We do it exceptionally well. We hunt warranted defendants while you are sleeping in the comfort of your home. We are pulling these people out of your communities. We pick up fugitives tax-free throughout the nation.
When you say tax-free, you mean at no cost to the taxpayer.
That's accurate.
Michelle contrasts this with the $18 million New York is spending on supervised release.
I guarantee you, if you would ask the good people of the city of New York, what would you like to do with $18 million? I guarantee you, not one of them, I don't care if they're green, white, black, orange, polka-dotted, liberal, progressive, Democrat, Republican, conservative, I guarantee you, not one of them is going to say, I would like to use it to fund the release of criminal offenders.
People say that people who have been arraigned and with bail set or eligible for supervised release, they are innocent until proven guilty. So to talk about them as criminal offenders is getting rid of that fundamental presumption of innocence.
Well, that is hullabaloo. That is a lot of malarkey, if you will. The fact of the matter is, we have the laws of the land, if you will. You're not supposed to go into the store and steal lipstick. It's against the law. Bail should be set on people that have recidivist activity.
Opinions of the bail bond industry divide along familiar political lines. Michelle and other bail bondsmen star in their own reality TV shows, appealing to people who favour a tough approach to law and order. But reform advocates like Peter Goldberg from the Brooklyn Community Bail Fund object to an industry which they say profits off people's freedom with little regulation, overcharging and taking advantage of poor and vulnerable people.
I say that he's absolutely incorrect. I mean, that's quite accusatory. I take that personally. So I think that that is inaccurate, and I don't appreciate being called predatory, and I beg to differ.
They want to get rid of your industry. And this is something that's getting a bit more traction around the United States, this idea of getting rid of money bail, getting rid of the bail bond industry. Are you concerned about this?
Of course I'm concerned about it. This is my business. This is my legacy. This is what I do. I wouldn't be called the bail bond queen if I weren't doing this for eons. So, I mean, that's not going to happen, not on my watch. They haven't met the redhead yet, but they will.
The bail industry is a powerful lobbying force in America, and Michelle Eskenazi is using all her resources to fight change in New York. Her opponents are united in their call for cash bail to go, but there's not yet consensus on how best to do it. Change may be on the horizon, but the road ahead is still not clear.
Let's see if I can get a song going.
You don't know what's in store, but you know that you feel for. Close your eyes.
Having survived the violence of Rikers Island, Joel Cruz says he wants to get his life together and concentrate on things like making music. He hopes his story will help push opinion in favour of bail reform and closing Rikers. Whether it does will depend on whether people see him and others like him as people who America's great principles of justice have failed, or, as Michelle Eskenazi put it, repeat offenders who deserve bail. They might look at people like you with a history of petty crime and say, well, hey, someone like that, he deserves it. What would you say to people like that?
You know, crime doesn't discriminate. You know what I'm saying? Homelessness doesn't discriminate. Addiction doesn't discriminate. You know, at the end of the day, this is just the extreme end of poverty. You know, for the people that want to say, oh, look at the history, he deserves to be there, you know, they have to understand that it could happen to them too.
You don't roll, trust me, girl. You want to be high for this.
That's just a little song.
That's all for this edition of Assignment, and from me, James Fletcher. The program was mixed in London by Neil Churchill. If you liked his work or indeed the whole program, why not give us a review on your favourite podcast service? Go on. Next week, with the number of terror attacks around the world on the increase, we're often reporting on the extraordinary things some people do when they find themselves in the midst of an attack. Last July, Islamist militants stormed a Dhaka restaurant, killing 29 people. Assignment returns to that night to hear the stories of bravery and courage from ordinary people who found themselves in the wrong place at the wrong time.